My name is Maureen O'Hagan. I was hired by the developer of Danvers Maple Square in Danvers to handle the distribution of the affordable units. So tonight is the public information meeting, which will discuss the lottery, the eligibility criteria, and then spend a good amount of time on the documents you need to provide in order to have the opportunity to lease a unit. This meeting is being recorded. So if you have, if you have a question that you do not want recorded, because we will post this meeting on our website tomorrow, let me know before you ask the question. I will turn the recording off. And then once we answer your question, I'll turn it back on. But it's up to you to ask me to turn it off. So tonight, again, is the public information meeting. Danvers Square is located at 128 Maple Street. It's a new 145-unit development that offers 29 affordable studios, 1, 2, and 3-bedroom apartments by lottery for eligible tenants. Each unit includes 1 or 2 bathrooms, depending on bedroom size and style, and a washer and dryer. 1 parking space per unit at no charge. There are additional parking spaces based on availability for $35 a month. Pets are allowed per policy. The monthly pet rent is $50 for a cat, $75 for a dog. No large breeds. I expect there will be breed limitations due to insurance liability issues, breed restrictions. Exceptions will be made for service animals or other animals needed to reasonably accommodate an individual with a disability. Storage units are available for $65 a month. It's a smoke-free building, and it's a great location right in downtown Danvers. Now, the monthly rents are $2,106 for a studio apartment, $2,372 for a one-bedroom, $2,632 for a two-bedroom, and $2,878 for a three-bedroom unit. Tenants are responsible for all utilities. The rents are not based on your income, so you're responsible for the rent as stated. If you have a Section 8 voucher or other housing voucher, there is not a minimum income requirement. If you do not have a Section 8 voucher or other housing voucher, there is a minimum income requirement, which are: a studio, the minimum income you must earn is $63,180. A one-bedroom, $71,160. Two-bedroom, $78,960. And a three-bedroom, $86,340. Now, if you don't earn up to that amount, or at least that amount, we may be able to take your assets under consideration, okay? Liquid assets, not 401ks. We may be able to take those under consideration to help you get to the minimum income number, okay? So we will look at that when we're reviewing your application. Now, in order to have an opportunity to lease a unit, you must provide a complete application, which includes all the required financial documentation, proof of local preference, IDs. That all needs to be provided on or before the application deadline with your application. If you provide a complete application, we will review it in its entirety for program eligibility, okay? Now, if you submit an incomplete application, meaning any of the financial documentation is missing, you will not be included in the lottery. You will receive an email, mainly, or a letter if you don't have an email, after the application deadline, which is when we begin reviewing the applications. We will list the documents you are missing, and if you have the choice of providing the missing documentation, and you will be added to the waiting list. If any units remain after the lottery, we will go to the waiting list to fill them. At that point, we will review your application for eligibility, and if you are eligible, program eligible, then we'll process you like we would for any of the applicants in the lottery, okay? If we don't go to the wait list to fill the units, which we most likely will based on experience, then your name would, you would begin the waiting list, should that be necessary. Now, there are two, if you have a Section 8 voucher three approvals you need to obtain. One, to be included in the lottery, which means you're eligible for the program, is for us to determine you meet the income qualifications. You don't exceed the income qualifications. You're included in the lottery. So before you will be offered a unit, you need to pass the leasing office screening, which will be done post-lottery. And then if you have a Section 8 voucher or other housing voucher, they will need to approve the project and the rent. So until we approve you and the leasing office, you pass their screening, at minimum, has to happen before you will be offered a unit. Again, if you have a Section 8 voucher, that's an added step that needs to be done before you will be offered a lease, okay? Tonight is a public information meeting. I'm here to answer any questions you have. I've opened up the chat, so you can type in your questions if you don't want to ask them in front of everybody. I'm more than happy to answer your questions. The application deadline is March 27th. Your application must be in our office on or before 11:59 p.m. March 27th. If you're mailing your application, it has to be postmarked on or before March 27th, and we have to receive it before April 10th, which is about 2 weeks after the application deadline. Any applications that are postmarked the March 27th but received after April 10th will be added to the waiting list. We're not going to review you for the lottery. And then the lottery right now is scheduled for April 23rd. If we're able to conduct it sooner, we will. And that will be based on the number of applications we receive, okay? So if we get a ton of applications, it will take us about a month to review them all. If we have a smaller amount, then we will move the lottery up a little bit. The units right now, and there could be delays, it's new construction, are available, should be available in April. I don't know when, if it's 1st of April, last of April, I don't know when. But that's what I've been told the initial lease up will happen. Again, this is new construction, so there are always delays. This builder is pretty good. It's being right on schedule. This has been going on for quite some time. But just keep in mind, April 25th is the scheduled move-in. Again, delays. If you want to listen to this meeting again, it will be posted on our website, mcohousingservices.com. It will be posted there through the application deadline, and then we'll just remove it. So you can certainly listen to it again if you want, or if you need to leave early, you can listen to the rest of the meeting. All right, so there are two main eligibility criteria to qualify. One is based on income. It's gross income from all income sources, so from all jobs, child support, alimony, Social Security, disability, pension, whatever it may be, gross income is used in determining your income. We project it forward 12 months, okay? So the minimum income limits are for a one-person household, you can earn up to $91,200, a two-person, $104,200, three-person, $117,250, four-person, $130,250, five-person, $140,700, and a six-person household can earn up to $151,100. Now, income needs to be provided for all household members 18 years of age or older, okay? Anyone under 18, if they're working, that's fine. We don't need to know their income. But anyone 18 years of age or older, even though you'll be signing the lease, their income and assets will count toward, there's no asset limit, their income will count towards eligibility, okay? And it's gross, so please remember that. There is no asset limit. However, if you have assets totaling $5,000 or less, we will add the actual interest and or dividends to your income in determining eligibility. If your assets are greater than $5,000, we will take the higher amount of the actual interest and dividends earned, and we'll add up the total value of all your assets, and we will multiply that by 0.06%. Whichever is greater will be added to your income in determining eligibility. I will tell you right now, I've never had anyone income out based on adding the interest and dividends to their income. It's going to happen sooner or later, but in my 20 plus years in this business, it has never happened. You cannot own a home. If you own a home now, you cannot own a home and rent an affordable apartment. So your home, you can certainly apply for the lottery, but you will cannot move in until that home has closed. Okay? Okay. All right. 20 of the 29 available units are available for households who currently live in Danvers, work for the town of Danvers or the Danvers school system, works for a company located in the town of Danvers, or has an offer of employment for a company located in Danvers, or have children attending the Danvers school system. Any one of those, you don't need to meet more than one, any one of those puts you in the local pool, all right? So 20 units are designated to the local pool. The remaining 9 units are in the open pool. Now, I will tell you, don't let that discourage you. My experience, and I'll get into this more later, but a very high percentage of applications we receive will not be included in the lottery. So I doubt very much we will get 20 applicants for the local pool. If we do not, we may. If we do not, then those units will be filled by the open pool, okay? Once the application deadline hits and we've received all the applications, any new application we receive, there is no more local pool, okay? So it only applies to the initial lease-up, and it only applies to the applications that are received on or before the application deadline. And once we start reviewing them, then there'll be some movement on the number of Danvers applicants or applicants who meet the local preference criteria that will be included in the lottery. So I wouldn't let that bother you too much. There are two group two units, one bedroom and one two bedroom apartment. If you require a group two, which is a wheelchair accessible unit, it's all set up in the unit, you know, lower countertops and all that kind of stuff. Obviously for those two units, applicants that require a group two unit would have priority for those units, and it doesn't matter where you land on the lottery list. You would go right to the top for the handicap accessible units. If we don't have applicants that require a group two unit, then those units will be filled by non-group two applicants. If you require a reasonable accommodation, you need to notify us as part of your lottery application, and you need to include a letter from your doctor. And then based on the letter should state you require a wheelchair accessible unit or whatever your reasonable accommodation letter is, reasonable accommodation you are requesting, needs to be provided in a letter from your doctor or healthcare professional telling us the reason why. You don't need medical details. And then if it passes screening, then, you know, we will be able to accommodate that special accommodation. All right, there are studios, 1, 2s, and 3-bedroom units. You need to understand in a lottery situation, we are only allowed to assign units to households who meet the household bedroom size for the unit. So if you're a single person and you want a 2-bedroom unit, you're not going to get it, okay? So if you are a single person, if you're a married couple, you are eligible for a 1-bedroom unit only. If you're a single parent or two parents with one child, you're eligible for a 2-bedroom unit, okay? Not a 3. You're only eligible for a 2. In a lottery situation, you're only eligible for the bedroom size that is determined based on there's at least one person per bedroom. A husband and wife or those in a similar living arrangement must share a bedroom, and then there is at least one person per bedroom thereafter, okay? Those are the main 3 criteria we use in determining household size. So if you're unable to share a bedroom for whatever reason, that's where a special accommodation would come into effect, and you would need to provide a letter from your doctor. I will say if you're pregnant, that unborn child is considered a household member. All right, so remember that. If you are in the process of a divorce or separation, we need to know you need to be far enough along in the process so we know how the family assets are being distributed or split. Okay, if you're not that far along in the process, then your soon to be exes, income, assets, home ownership status, will they need to apply, will be taken under consideration in determining eligibility, even if they will not be living in the unit. Okay? So keep that in mind. 33.4% of the local pool applicants, and these are the applicants that were determined eligible to participate in the lottery. If the number of minority applicants do not equal 33.4%, then we will do a mini lottery, what I call a mini lottery, the night of the lottery in April, and we will move by lottery the number of non-local minority applicants from the open pool into the local pool. The benefit of that is if you are in the local pool, you have two opportunities for a unit. If you are in the open pool, you only have one. So even though the non-local minority applicants are not local, we need to meet the 33.4% number of minority applicants in the local pool. So anyone moved from the open pool into the local pool will now have two opportunities for a unit as well. They will be included in the local pool and they will be included in the open pool, okay? On an annual basis, when you lease an affordable unit, you need to be recertified on an annual basis to make sure you still don't exceed the income limit. The income limit, as I've already gone over, is at 80% of median. So a one-person household can earn $91,200. When you go up for recertification, which you would receive notification about 190 to 120 days before you need to renew your lease, at that point you can earn 140% of the median income. So if your initial eligibility was $91,200, you can now earn up to $127,680 before you would be determined ineligible for an affordable apartment. So they allow for that so people don't, as they're earning more money, moving up in their careers or whatever, they don't have to move too quickly. So it really, it really helps when we go through the recertification process. If by chance you do exceed your income limit for recertification, at that point you have the opportunity to stay and pay market rent or move out, all right? And then if you choose to move out, then the next tenant that goes in that unit will be affordable as well. Now, the way the lottery works, like I said, we review every applicant, pre-screen every applicant prior to the lottery. Those that are determined eligible will receive a lottery code. It's three initials of your name. It's some combination of the initials in your name. That is what is announced during the lottery. We do not announce individuals' names. And that is to protect your privacy. The only ones who will know that you're affordable, the only ones we tell would obviously be the leasing office. They will know because they need to know to do their paperwork. Excuse me, I have the hiccups all of a sudden. So with all the 29 units, there are six studio apartments. Four are in the local pool. Two are in the open pool. There are 12 one-bedroom apartments. Eight are in the local pool. Four are in the open pool. There are 10 two-bedroom apartments. Seven are in the local pool, and three are in the open pool. And there's one three-bedroom unit, and that will be distributed through the open pool. I'm sorry, the local pool. For the three-bedroom, the one unit is local pool, okay? So that is how the initial breakdown of units will go in the application. There's a list of all the affordable unit numbers. There's the layout for each floor so you can see where the units are available and you can see the layout of the units based on the information that's included in the lottery. So you can certainly take a look at all that. So the way the lottery will work, everyone has their lottery code. We throw all the local pool in one basket. And we will pull everyone who applied to the local pool. If we have 100 people, We're going to pull the 100 people. That's going to create the ranking list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, however long it is, in determining the distribution of the units. And then we're going to do the same thing for the open pool, okay? We're going to, everyone who's in the open pool, and keeping in mind it's also those in the local pool, because they have two opportunities for a unit, we're going to pull all those tickets out as well and create the ranking list, 1, 2, 3, however deep it needs to go. Post-lottery, after the lottery, I will email you the list as drawn, but I will also, after the lottery, break the list down by one bedroom. Studios, 1, 2, and 3 bedroom. So I will email you the redone ranking list based on the order of opportunity to lease. And it will be broken out by bedroom size. So the studios, the 1s, the 2s, the 3s, local pool and open pool for each bedroom size, obviously, except the 3 bedrooms, since it's just, that's a designated local pool unit. So I will email that to you as well, so you know where you stand in the lottery list to lease an affordable apartment, okay? That will, usually it is emailed the same day as the lottery, and that all depends on the number of applications we receive. Again, just remember, I understand you may want, if you're a single person, a 2-bedroom unit, you're not going to get one. You're only eligible for a 1-bedroom unit. Now, on the application, we ask for you to choose your bedroom size. So if you're a single person and choose a 2-bedroom, you're not going to be in the lottery for a 1-bedroom unit, and you're not going to get a unit, okay? So remember that when you're filling out the application. Now, household size preference will override the local preference, meaning if we have, we're trying to fill the 10 2-bedroom units, we've exhausted all the 2-bedroom applicants in the local pool to fill those units, then we will fill those units from the open pool, okay? So, again, don't be discouraged about applying because of the lower number of open pool units that will be available. I can pretty much say, based on experience, the local pool will most likely be exhausted, and we will fill plenty of designated local pool units from the open pool. Okay, let's see. Household size shall not exceed, nor may the maximum allowable household size be more restrictive than state sanitary code requirements. What that means is there's 50 square feet per person per bedroom, okay? So if you're, say, for example, if you're a 5-person household and you don't want to pay 3-bedroom rent, as long as the bedroom was 150 square feet, then we could offer you a 2-bedroom unit, all right, because you need 50 square feet per person per bedroom. If the bedroom, the second bedroom is 135 square feet, it's only big enough for 2 people, okay? So we do have to look at that when we determine what unit size people get. And again, households will not be approved for units larger than their household size allows. Okay, that is just standard across the board. Now, post-lottery, I will email you the lottery list and the order, the ranking order to lease list. We will forward those that have the initial opportunity to the leasing office. They will be in touch with you to schedule an appointment to go in and be screened for the, through the leasing office. They'll probably check credit, pass landlord. I don't know what they do, a query check. We don't have anything to do with that. So you will need to contact a leasing office, schedule an appointment, or maybe they do things online, I don't know. Go through the leasing office screening. If you pass the leasing office screening, you will be offered a unit. If you fail the leasing office screening, even though we determined you're eligible, you will not be leasing a unit, okay? I know for a fact, well, I can't say that, but I expect they definitely will pull on credit, and there will be other things as well. If you've been approved for a unit, you will obviously be required to pay the first month's rent and the security deposit, and the security deposit is 1 month's rent. Remember, if you have a voucher, then before you will be offered a unit, it's a new property, so the housing authority, whoever your housing authority is, needs to come in and inspect the property and approve the rent. And obviously they use the fair market rent. So the fair market rent, for example, may work for a studio with 2 and 3 bedroom, but the rent is too high for a 1 bedroom, which more than likely would mean the housing authority won't approve you for a 1 bedroom unit. Okay. If the rent is higher than the fair market rent, you won't be approved. That's my experience, but absolutely don't take that as golden. I would talk to the leasing office first. The project amenities, they have a fitness room, club room, concierge. They have Amazon locker if you get things delivered through Amazon, trash chute, and a courtyard. All right. Are there any questions on the lottery, how we manage it, how units are distributed, eligibility criteria? Does anyone have any questions? Is a refrigerated dishwasher? Yes, those are all provided, all the kitchen appliances, and probably a microwave as well will be provided in the unit. All right, so I'm going to skip ahead in the application. Page 7 is a list of the available units. You can review 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14, our layout of each floor of the building, and we have the unit numbers designated right next to it, so you can review that as you wish. So I'm going to spend the rest of the time on the application process. So hopefully, oh, someone has a question. Anne-Marie?
Yep, just one quick question, please. If you're a single person, can you apply for the studio or the one bedroom?
Yes.
So what I put on my application, could I check off both or do I have to choose? Okay.
You can check off both and then you can choose which one you get or which one you want to take.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So on the application, the first page, which is page 15, is your basic information, name, address.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm very sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay. And
I want to thank you for your service.
You're very welcome.
So if I have a, I'm applying for this myself, but I have a friend that's in housing. Are they still eligible? Although I have Section 8, but are they still eligible?
Well, yes, they can apply, but let me ask you this question. They're in housing, so where do they live? At the Danvers
Beverly.
Housing Authority or something like that?
Beverly.
Beverly. So are they in a housing authority unit, or are they in a private unit that accepts Section 8?
No, a private unit.
Then I think they probably would be okay.
Okay.
What I was getting at, if you understand why I asked all the questions,
right?
If they're living in the housing authority unit, the voucher or the reduced rent goes with the unit.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were to leave that, they are leaving that behind. But if they're if they're renting a room or an apartment I own, and they want to move to Beverly,
it's the one that goes with the household. So therefore, if they're in the housing unit, which I find is so different from where I live, but they are eligible, although they are in a housing unit.
But they have a Section 8 voucher, right?
No. A housing unit by Beverly.
So Beverly Housing Authority owns the unit.
Right. But they don't have Section 8.
So they don't have Section 8. So I don't know. So they're gonna have to meet the minimum income requirement.
Okay.
Whereas you have a Section 8 voucher, you won't have to.
I won't.
No.
And, although that I am living in a very nice place and I've been dying to get into this place since it was built. But is there anything that will fault me because I'm living so well in this beautiful place that you provided for me?
Is there anything that will what?
Prevent me.
Only if you don't, I don't think so. Well, yes, if you have rotten credit or bad, if you don't pass the leasing office screening,
right,
then you're not going to move in.
Okay.
But to have the opportunity through us, you need to make sure you provide all the required documentation, which I'm going into shortly.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And I definitely appreciate all you do.
Oh, glad to do it. This is the fun part. I love the public information meeting.
I've dealt with you before. You were just very well.
Okay. Great. Thank you. All right. So moving on. Again, if you meet one of the local preference criteria, on page 15 of the application is what you would check off, which one or ones apply to you. And again, you only need to meet one to be included in the local pool. You need to tell us if you have a Section 8 or other housing voucher. It's a simple yes, no. You need to check off your bedroom sizes that you're interested in. Again, remember, single people, you're not getting a two-bedroom unit, so I would be careful of what you check off. If you require a wheelchair group 2 unit, check yes or no. Again, those who require a group 2 unit will have priority for those units no matter where you are in the lottery. Okay, if we have more than 2 people, then those will be distributed based on their actual lottery numbers. And if you require a special accommodation, check yes or no. We ask you to explain, but you also need to provide a letter from your doctor telling us why. And then the total household size, you need to provide the number of people living in the unit. And then including yourself, you need to provide the household composition. So if you're on the application, you need to put your name down a second time and then list everybody else that will be living in the unit. The next page, we've just used this for your financial information to get a ballpark of what your monthly base income is for every household member over the age of 18. So if you can provide that information, we don't hold you to it because you need to provide all the backup documentation, but it gives us a sense of where you are income-wise. Same for your assets, your current balances and all your asset accounts, meaning checking, savings, stocks, bonds, retirement, revocable trusts, life insurance policies. You provide us with the current balance, and then you will also need to provide all the backup documentation, which I will get to shortly. Your employment status, you need to provide that information. If you're retired, just write retired. If you're unemployed, just write unemployed. But if you are working, we do ask for that information. And then I talked about 33.4% of the applicants in the local pool need to be minority. The last section on page 16, it says about your household, and this is where you would provide that information. It is completely optional to fill out. No one's forcing you to do it, but if you are a minority, it will work to your advantage to complete this and submit it with your application. But again, you don't have to. This is where we will determine your minority status based on what you've provided on that section. Page 17, you just need to sign and date, and that's everybody over the age of 18. Page 18 and 19 is the affidavit and disclosure form. You need to read, sign, and date that. And then now we're getting into the nitty-gritty on how to complete the application. So I get very frustrated, and I think we do a pretty good job of providing the list of required financial documentation, but I get incredibly frustrated by the number of people who submit an incomplete application and then get mad at us when it's not our fault. So what I have done, I have put together an application tip form, and this was initially put together and continues to grow as I see where the problems are, that what documentation people are not providing. And the main issue, and I'm going to be very honest with you, the main issue is people don't read it, okay? If you read what we provided, you would have, I don't think, have any doubt of what is required. But I did put this form together to help you to point out where people fail or what documents people fail to provide, all right? But this application says 50% of applications aren't included in the lottery. The number is closer to 70. It's getting worse for every lottery I do, which is why I get really frustrated. So I'm going to go through them. Number 2 says, in the required financial sheet, which starts on the next page, which is 21 in the application, I have added notes. If you see a note, you need to read the note. Because if you don't read the note, it can be the difference between a complete and incomplete application or being eligible or ineligible, okay? So read the notes. All financial documentation, income, assets, what's not written here, is also tax return, is required for all adults aged 18 or older, and there is no exception. Don't call me and tell me, well, my kid's in college. I don't care. He's over the age of 18. He needs to provide his income, assets, and, again, tax information, although it's not there. So it doesn't matter if he's in college or not. He's over the age of 18. All asset statements must include your name, account number, and institution name. People will just bring up their account on their cell phone nine times and then attach it or send it to us. Nine times out of ten, it doesn't have your name. It doesn't have the the account number, and it may not have the institution name. If any of the accounts you provide to us do not have at minimum those three pieces of information on the document, your application is incomplete and we're not even going to review it, okay? So just, you need to go in and actually print the statements from each of your assets, whether it's your lender, your 401k, your lender, your checking and savings accounts, your IRAs, retirement accounts, you need to get the final statement. Okay, I'm going to go into more detail on that when I start talking about checking accounts, but I'm not going to get out of line here. You do not take photos or copy a statement from your phone and attach it. Usually, again, all the information's not there. You will not be included in the information in the lottery. Do not assume you do not need to provide a certain document. Feel free to call us or email us. That is what we are here for. We will tell you if you should submit it or not. When in doubt and you don't want to call us, that's fine, but just submit it. If we don't need it, we will shred it, okay? So I'd rather have more documentation than less so we can make it work for you. You do need to provide the current statement of the 401k, 403b, and other things. People were starting to tell me, well, you can see how much is in my account based on my pay stub. No, the pay stub is telling me how much you've put in year to date. It's not telling me the full value of those accounts. So you actually need to provide the last statement from each of those accounts. If you have a Robinhood or Coinbase, Acorn accounts, any other online investment accounts, those are considered part of your assets, and you need to provide the latest statement. Some people have said to me, well, I don't have any money in my Robinhood account. I don't know that, okay? For all I know, you have $500,000 in your retirement in the Robinhood account. Without providing me a copy of the documentation, I don't know. And for rental purposes, there is no asset limit for rentals, okay? So whether you, if you even have a $500,000 in the account, it's not going to affect your eligibility, all right? Or shouldn't, let me rephrase, shouldn't affect your eligibility because, you know, you have stocks and stuff, and the interest and dividends earned will be added to your income. So I can't forget to say that. If you are unable to provide specific information, then submit a note with your application telling us the circumstances. I can't guarantee you will be included in the lottery, but, you know, if you don't let us know that there was an issue with something, then you definitely won't be included in the lottery. If we can work with you, we will. Our job is to approve you. I hate disqualifying people. So call us or absolutely write a letter with your application if you have to explain anything, okay? I've already mentioned don't take photos with your cell phone of any documentation, email it to us. The photos 90%, 99% of the time are not legible, and we will not accept them. And then you also can fax your information to us. We accept information, email, fax. You can mail it. You can drop it off in our office. But if you fax your information, and if we don't receive all the pages for your application, you won't be included in the lottery. And I mention this because a lot of people will go to Staples or something and have them faxed. And a lot of times we don't get all the pages, okay? And that's not on us, technically on Staples, but you won't be included in the lottery. Okay, so those are all my notes and hints to you, and hopefully none of you will do none of that. So now I'm going to go over the full list of the required financial documentation. I'm going to tell you what everything is, why you need to provide it, and how we use it so you understand. Obviously, and the first four are pretty obvious. One, we need identification for each household member, driver's license, passport, birth certificate, If you have a Section 8 or other housing voucher, you need to provide us a copy of it. We are not going to take your word that you have a voucher. You need to provide the appropriate documentation. Again, local preference. If you meet one of the local preference criteria, you can provide a copy of your lease, current utility bill, voter registration, whatever you need to prove that you currently live or work or have children going to the Danvers Public Schools. If you have a kid in the Danvers Public Schools and you work, or I'm sorry, if you currently live outside of Danvers, then the school will need to write a letter to us, and you can submit that letter with your application. If you require a special accommodation, again, you need to provide a letter from your doctor, and then if you have the letter, we may be able to take that under consideration. If you fail to provide a letter, again, it will not be taken under consideration.
Hey, okay? Maureen?
Yes.
So if you're a local resident, you can just provide a copy of your driver's license with your address?
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Okay, so the nitty-gritty. These are the financial documentations you need to provide. We need the last 5 consecutive pay stubs for all jobs, okay? And we need 5, whether you are paid weekly, biweekly, semi-weekly, or monthly. People will send us 3 and say it covers 5 weeks. That's great. That is not what we asked for. We need 5 pay stubs, okay? Now, when we determine your income, we will determine it 2 ways. 1, we will look at your gross pay per paycheck, average it out, and multiply by the number of pay periods, whether it's 12, 24, 26, or 52. That's 1. And then we will look at the year-to-date. We will divide by the number of weeks in the year, which we get from a website, timeanddate.com, and then we will multiply by 52. We'll get the average year-to-date and then multiply by 52. Whichever is higher is going to be what counts for your income. Now, we also look at your 2020, we'll look at your 2024 W-2s, and we will include that income as well. Whichever of the 3 is greater is what is going to be counted as your eligibility income, all right? Now, if there's been a significant change between your 2025, what we project forward, and what you earned based on your 2024 W-2, then you need to explain it. If you are no longer working for a company you worked for in 2024, then you need to provide a copy of the separation letter, all right? And that may just explain the why you're earning less. If you have a new job, then you need to provide a copy of your offer letter, all right? So any company you're no longer working for that you received a W-2 for in 2024, you need to provide a copy of the separation letter, and any new jobs, a copy of the offer letter, okay? We read them both, and we will determine your income. If you're new job, you know, we'll definitely look at that offer letter to make sure we have it as close as possible to what your anticipated earnings will be.
Hey, Maureen.
Yeah.
So if you, if your 2024 income is X, and then in 2025 it increases because of an annuity payment or something like that, so it's an increase versus 2024, the same explanation needs to be provided?
Well, no, because if it's not a, if it's not a work, I would point it out. And are you talking just about just annuity distribution? Are you retired?
No.
Okay. So if you're getting that extra income, if it's a one-time thing, it probably is going to be counted as an asset, not income. But without seeing the paperwork, I won't know.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. Now, if you are unemployed on disability, workers' comp, or receive severance pay or anything like that, then for unemployment, we need, it says here, unemployment checks. Sorry, they don't give checks anymore. Everything's done online mostly. So I need a copy of this one sheet that tells us what you're getting on a weekly basis, and it tells you when your payments end. And then I also need the payment history from your what you've earned year to date, so I can look to see, you know, how much you're getting every paycheck, every unemployment check. So you need to provide that documentation. With disability, workers' comp, and severance pay, you have paperwork if this applies to any of you. Disability, you have paperwork that tells you how much you're getting, or family medical leave, how much you're getting, workers' comp, how much you're getting, when you're going back to work. Disability, is it short-term, is it long-term? If it's short-term, do you know when you're going back? Severance pay, there's an end date to that, so we need to know what that end date is and how much you're getting a week or biweekly or however often you're getting it. So we need that information for initially. Now, the way we look at your pay stubs, yes, I already explained how we're going to project your income out. But we also will look at it for, we'll know if you have a retirement account, because that will be one of the deductions in your paycheck. And it also will tell us if your check is direct deposited. And a lot of times, if your check is direct deposited, it will give us like the last four digits of your checking or savings or whatever account that money's going into. So I mention this because I've had people that have their money separated into like five different bank accounts. One's the emergency fund, one's a Christmas club, or whatever. But the issue is sometimes people forget they have those accounts because they don't touch it. And kudos for you. But we're going to look for those accounts when we start reviewing your assets, okay? So if you don't provide the account and we see it on your bank, on your paycheck, unfortunately, your application is going to be incomplete. So I just ask you to review your paycheck to make sure you're providing us with all your bank statements, okay? So I'd hate for you to be disqualified for that reason. And it happens because people just, it's not money they touch. Okay, if you receive Social Security, any annuities, insurance policies, retirement funds, pension, disability, death benefits, or any other similar type of periodic receipts, again, we need the letters telling us how much you're getting. Now, don't come back to me, and then people have said this, well, you can see in my bank statement that I receive Social Security. You are correct. What I don't know is if that is net or gross. So your income eligibility is based on gross income. Same with unemployment. Some people, you know, elect to have taxes taken out of it. Social Security, you may have Medicare or Medicaid taken out of the check. And retirement funds, pensions, any of that, you may be having taxes taken out. So we don't know that. So that's why you need to provide the printed documentation, which is going to show us your gross amount. Because sometimes it's not going to match up with what we see in your bank statement. So that's why your income is on gross. That's why you need to provide a copy of the documentation that tells us what that amount is. Now, for Social Security, it's just one piece of paper. All we need to know is what your 2025 Social Security benefits will be. That's it. We don't need the last five because we know it doesn't change. And it usually doesn't change for disability or retirement, pensions. Those amounts usually don't change either. So we just need the letter when it was the account was initially set up that tells us what the gross amount is. If that amount changes annually, then you need to provide the letter for 2025. So it's not difficult, but hopefully you have kept those letters in your files. Now, if you receive child support or alimony, child support, if you're getting your child support through the Department of Revenue, the DOR, then you need to provide us with the DOR paperwork. Again, there's one sheet that's going to tell us, and I wish I knew the names of the documents, I don't. One sheet is going to tell us how much is due you on a monthly basis, how much they paid this current month or when their last payment was, and if they are in arrears. Okay, that's one sheet. And then the second sheet is your pay history for the last 12 months, okay? So if you are awarded, say, $500 a month, and you're only getting $100, we're not going to count $500 as your child support. And that may help you or hurt you, I don't know. But that's why we need the pay history for your child support. If you are divorced, obviously, and you get in your divorce papers dictates the amount of child support you should get, and you don't get it through the DOR, then you need to provide us with a copy of your divorce papers. Same with alimony. It's usually awarded through the divorce. and it would be part of the divorce papers. So you need that. If you are someone who is going through a divorce and there's a home owned by you and your ex or soon to be ex, that needs to be out of your name, and your name needs to be off the deed before you will be allowed to move in or lease an affordable apartment, okay? So we do check all that. If you are not receiving child support at all, whether you just never did or whether it was awarded to you and you're not getting it, there in part of the application on page 25 is the custody and child support affidavit. You need to complete this sheet, one for each child, okay, and send that in with your application. If you don't tell us or give us any information, if you don't give us any information and we see on your application you have children and you don't give us any information whether you get child support or not, you're not going to be included in the lottery. So you got to let us know, because child support, alimony, that's all part of your income, all right? Because remember, it's gross income from all sources. All right. If you are self-employed, you need to provide a spreadsheet for the last 12 months, okay? If you've already done your 2024 taxes, you have already done this work, so you can provide just your 2024 taxes, but you would still need to provide the income and expenses you've had for January and February of this year, okay? In March, if you apply late into March. But essentially, we need the last 12 months of income and expenses broken out monthly. I'm repeating myself. And so we will determine your net income. Unlike people who do not work, are not self-employed, their income is based on gross. But as a self-employed person, you have business expenses. So those are taken under consideration in determining your income. So you need to provide that spreadsheet. You also need to provide any business checking and savings or money market accounts, whatever kind of accounts you have. And you also need to provide the last 3 years of tax returns. If you're not self-employed, we only need the last year. But you need to provide the last 3 years if you are self-employed. I'm missing something here. Hang on. Give me a second. Nope, further along. Okay, any questions on income? How we determine it, what you need to provide? Anything? No? Okay. So we're moving on to tax returns. If you have filed your 2024 tax return, then we only need your 2024 return. We don't need your 2023. If you haven't, and you don't have to because the application deadline is before the tax deadline. So if you haven't filed your 2024 taxes, then we need your 2023 federal income tax return. All right? We need every page that you submit to the IRS. Some people give us the two pages. We look at your tax return very closely. We're going to know if you have interest dividends. We're going to know if you get Social Security, if you're getting any distributions that year from any of your investment accounts. We're going to know if you're self-employed. It's going to tell us on page one of the tax return. So if we see any of that, we're going to know there's more than two pages to the tax return. All right? So pay attention. We only want your federal income tax return. We do not want your state. If you send us your state return, that is automatically shredded. We don't even save it for later. It's just shredded because we don't need it and won't look at it. So if you do not have copies of your 2023 federal income tax return, and that's the one you need to provide, you have two options. You can go and create a password and username at the irs.gov, and then you can print out a copy of your tax transcript. You have the option of printing out your tax transcript, or they will send you a copy of your tax return. They will charge you for a copy of your tax return, so we are very happy. We don't want you to pay any money, so you want to get a copy of your tax transcript. If you create an account, you can go on the website and you can print that transcript out. It takes, from my understanding and talking to people, once they get their account up and running, it takes like 5 minutes, okay? If you did not file taxes in 2023, then you need to provide a letter that verifies you didn't file taxes. And the, it's called, what's it called? A verification of non-filing. Okay? Again, you, if you log into the IRS.gov, you can print out that letter. It's a real short letter. It's just the form letter from the IRS, and just send that to us. Nothing more than that. We just need the document to prove you did not file the tax return. The other option to do both is you can go on the IRS.gov. You can print out Form 4506-T, fill that out for either a copy of your 2023 tax transcript or the verification of non-filing. You can fill that form out and you can fax it or mail it to the IRS. The second page of that form, when you print it out from the IRS.gov, will provide the fax number and will provide the address to mail the form in. The most, the easiest way is to log in to the IRS and create an account. Having said that, I don't know what's going on with the IRS these days, with all the layoffs and all that kind of stuff, so I don't know if there's been any impact on their website. I expect not, but I don't know. Okay, so again, if you are sending us your 2023 tax return because you haven't done 2024 yet, then we will need your 2023 and your 2024 W-2s, because I know you have those, okay? So we will need both. If you don't have copies of your W-2s, everything I just said regarding copy of your taxes, you can go on, log into the IRS.gov, and you want to ask for your wage and income transcript for 2023. You can get that and then print it out and you're all set, or you can use Form 4506-T, which I've already discussed and don't need to go over again. Anne-Marie?
Sorry about that, Maureen.
That's okay.
I just had a question because my employer gave me my 2024 W-2,
yeah,
and they actually put, let's say, $40,500, and I really made $7,000 less. Can I provide, and it, supposedly the payroll company is going to fix it before tax, but can I include my last pay stub for the whole year and my W-2?
Yes, do that, but I would also suggest that you write a letter and point that out to us.
Okay, should I have my employer write a letter or just me explain why the W-2 is different than what my pay stub for the year says?
You can do it.
Okay, just wanted to check. It's never happened.
Yeah, because we'll have both ways to prove it, so
yes,
you can do it rather than bug your boss.
Okay.
Okay, any questions on taxes, W-2s? Okay, moving on to assets. And I want to talk about checking and savings. They're both looked at the same. So checking and savings, you need to provide your last three bank statements. I don't want running transcripts for 3 months. You need to go in. If you don't get them mailed to you anymore, you can log into your bank account and you can print out the e-statements. We need the last 3 months of your bank statements. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we are definitely going to match up the bank accounts your pay goes into. And if it's in multiple accounts, we're going to look for each of those accounts. Now, we look at your deposits in your bank, in your checking and savings account with a fine-tooth comb, all right? We're going to match up your payroll, direct deposit. If you get Social Security, we're going to look for the Social Security benefit statement. If you're getting Fidelity, whatever every month, transferred into your account, we're going to look for the Fidelity statement. If you have Venmo or Cash App, you also need to provide the last 3 month statements for those, and you need to explain where all the money that was deposited in your account came from. Now, I know it's probably not always, but most likely people paying you back for going out or whatever. But we are finding people are now being paid through Venmo. They're being paid through a Cash App. So you need to identify every deposit in those accounts. So you need to provide the last three checking account statements, savings account statements, Cash App, Venmo, any one of those kind of accounts. I can't keep up with them. There's so many of them. So if you have, going back to your bank statements, if you have an ATM deposit, a mobile deposit, over-the-counter deposit, you need to explain where that money came from. And you can write directly on the bank statement where that money was, came from. It could, if it's a Zelle, which is similar, as everyone knows, you know, through your bank from one bank to another. If it's a Zelle account, you need to explain what that money is for. It could be reimbursement for something. It could be someone gifting you money. It could be multitudes of things. You need to explain it. Failure to explain all the non-obvious deposits like payroll and all that kind of stuff, then we're going to average out each one of those deposits for each of your bank statements, and we're going to multiply by 12. And sometimes that will make you ineligible for the unit because you didn't explain those deposits. We're not too, we look at them, like I said, we do look at them with a fine-tooth comb. All you need to do is explain them, and that's it, okay? If you've done that and we're reviewing things and we have additional questions, that's on us. That's not on you, as long as you've explained where that money comes from, okay? Now, we're going to look at transfers between accounts. So if you get, if I'm sending money to account 1234, I received money from account 1234, savings or whatever it may be, I'm going to look for an account 1234 as one of the checking or savings accounts that you provided to us. If that is an account that belongs to somebody else that is transferring money into your account, you need to explain that. And that person needs to provide a copy, the first page of the latest statement, okay, just page one. You can cross out the dollar amounts and all that kind of stuff, but we need to have their name on it. We need to be able to read their name, and we need to be able to read the account number, okay? They can black out everything else or cover everything else when they send it to us, and obviously the bank name. So you need to, and that's the way you're going to prove that's not your account. If you don't approve it and we see it, you didn't provide us with an account, you're not going to be included in the lottery, okay? Now, we do look at how you spend your money, not closely. Basically, we just scan down the page to see if there's any withdrawals going out of your account into another financial account, whether it's another bank account, it goes to Fidelity, it goes to Robinhood, it goes to Acorn, it's transferred to an account we don't see. That's all we look for. I don't care how you spend the money. It's none of my business. But we do, we'll look through the transactions to see if it's going into any other financial accounts. Okay? So pay attention to that too if you choose to. So again, no running transaction. Don't give me 3 months in, you know, 50 pages. I want the individual bank statements. Okay? Now, excuse me. There's something else I'm forgetting here. The life of me is blinking out of my head. If I think of it, I'll tell you. So again, Cash App, Venmo, same thing. Explain the deposits. If you have a prepaid debit card, this is not your ATM card that's attached to your bank account, but a debit card. Social Security is put on a debit card. Unemployment can be put on a debit card. A lot of people are being paid, like for a Visa prepaid card. They're getting paid via debit cards. You need to provide us with just the last statement of that card. I remember what I wanted to tell you. Sorry, I'm going to interrupt myself. Sometimes your, not your checking account, but your savings account, they may send it to you quarterly rather than monthly. Then all we need is the quarterly because that's covering 3 months. Okay, so I'm okay with that. So just to let you know that. Don't freak out if you don't have 3 months because it'll tell us the time frame at the top of the statement. It'll say January 1st through March 31st, 2020. Five. So right now, if that's the way it is, we need your statement through the end of December 2024, because more than likely, the March one isn't available yet. Okay, so just keep that in mind. So back to the debit card. So you need to provide us just the last statement of your debit card, and we use that because the balance, if there's a balance, is part of your assets, and we check to make sure that's the only thing going on the account. Okay. That nothing else is going on. You're not getting deposits from anybody else. So that's why we look at that and check that out. Okay. If you have a revocable trust, you need to provide us with a copy of the trust, and then we'll look at that. And that would go if you're getting income from it, it's going to count as income. If you're not, it's just in there, then the balance is an asset. But that is for a revocable trust. If you have investment accounts, stocks, bonds, treasury, CDs, mutual funds, money market, Robinhood, or any other online account, we only need the last statement. We do not need the last three, just the last statement, okay? If you have retirement, IRA, Roth IRA, 401k, 403b, or whatever your retirement accounts are called, for all current, and if you have any one of the, well, 401k or 403b or whatever, through past jobs, and you haven't rolled it into a rollover IRA, you need to provide those statements as well. Again, just the last statement. Again, some of them may only provide annual state. Not the 401k may only provide annual, but the Roth IRA and the IRA will provide monthly statements. So you need to provide those statements to us as well. All right. If you have a whole life or universal life insurance, more than likely there is a cash value to that account, those accounts. This is not a life insurance policy that perhaps you get through your employer. That doesn't count because if you no longer work for them, that goes away. But if you have purchased your personal life insurance policy and it's whole life or universal life, there's a cash value. So we need that statement that will tell us what the cash value is. If you have term life insurance, there is no cash value to that, so we do not need a copy of that, okay? If you have lump sum receipts or one-time receipts, those are going to be counted as assets versus income. However, if you get regular deposits, maybe four times a year or something, that is going to count towards income. But it's just like one time. So say you get Social Security and you got a fat check, which is money owed you, that is not going to count as income. If you have gambling, and you one-time thing, or you won the lottery and you won $1,000, that's asset, not income. Okay? Now a little bit more on students. Even though they all have to provide their income, assets, and last tax return. But how we look at their income can differ. So if they are a full-time college student and they are dependent on your federal income tax return, then we are only going to count $480 of their income towards the household income eligibility. Just $480. If they are a full-time and or a part-time student and they are not a dependent on your federal income tax return, then their income will count towards your household eligibility. And if you have a child who is a part-time student, whether or not they are on your tax return, their income is still going to count towards the income eligibility. Okay? Now you need to provide documentation that they are a student. So if they're still in high school, you know, the high school can write a letter. If they're in college, you can get a printout of where they're going to school. It could be their class schedule. It will say full-time, part-time. It'll say the semester they're going. See, where are we? February, so we're in the spring semester. That's all we need. Okay. Just if they're a full-time student right now, spring semester, we need that. They are going into summer sooner rather than later. So if they are getting a summer job, that job will count towards the income eligibility. And if they've worked it the past few years because they are providing tax returns and W-2s, we're going to know. So we're going to ask for that information as well. 9 times out of 10, it does not impact eligibility, but we do require that documentation. I've already mentioned a household with a unborn child, I can't take my eyes off Diva there. She's so beautiful. The unborn child is considered a household member, so you will need to provide a letter from the doctor or the doctor's nurse or someone that will confirm that you are pregnant and with the due date. Again, I've spoken about if you're going through a divorce or separation, if you're far enough along in the process, that we know how your household assets are being distributed. That's great. If not, then your soon-to-be ex needs to provide all the required income, assets, and home buyer status, even though they won't be living with you in the apartment. One thing that is not here that should be, a lot of people were finding these days, I don't think I even put it on here. Hang on. Some may be getting gifts from family members to help pay the rent, and I didn't include it on here, so no one will be penalized. But if you're getting a regular gift from somebody to help pay the rent or pay the bills, that is income. That is considered a gift, and that needs to be put in writing and sent as part of your application, okay? It's not listed in the application, so no one is going to be penalized for it. However, we're going to see, meaning we're not going to determine your application incomplete because it's not there, because I don't have it here. You know, if you don't include it, we see the deposits in your bank account and you've explained them a gift, then we're going to be looking for that documentation as well. And then finally, which I forgot to mention earlier, the new income limits, the income limits I just gave you were based on the 2024 income limits. The HUD has not released the 2025 limits yet. Those will be released, it's typically around April 1st. We got a new president in office, so I don't know if they'll make the April 1st numbers or not. But once, those income limits are released, those are the income limits that will be used in determining your household eligibility. Usually they go up. I've not worked where they've gone down at all. I've been in this business a lot of years, so usually they are increased. So if you're close to any of the income limits, submit your application anyways, because if the income limits go up and you're within those limits, we will include you in the lottery, okay? So you want to make sure you do that. I think that's it. Any questions?
Just sort of off-the-wall question.
Sure.
But, so the lottery happens. You get picked. You're number one. You're number two. Do you have to pick which unit you go in?
Yeah.
Or just get that signed by the lottery?
No, you can select. The leasing office, when you meet with the leasing office, you'll go in, meet with them, go through this screening, and then you'll select your unit. Yeah. And now I'm assuming this. I don't control the leasing office. Once I turn you over to the leasing office, I'm kind of done until next year when you need to be recertified. One thing I want to mention as well, rents are not fixed. They are going to be adjusted on an annual basis, period, okay? These units are advertised at the specific rent. That is the rent they'll be leased at. But you can guarantee come next year you're going to have new rents, and they've been going up every year. So just these are not fixed rents for the affordable apartment. So just remember that. Some people think they are, and they're not. So I don't want any confusion there. So this meeting will be posted on our website tomorrow if you want to listen to anything again. We are here. Question. What if you're in the process of selling a house? Does it have to be sold before the lottery? Absolutely not. It does not. It does not have to be sold before the lottery. It has to be sold and closed before you can move in to the affordable apartment. So if you are in the process of selling your house, then you need to give us the documentation on that. I can go on MLS myself and look at it if it's listed on MLS. So we will need to provide us that documentation. As long as it's sold before you're moving in, you're good. Okay, you're very welcome. I think that's everything. Any other questions? Oh, I know. I started to say when I saw the note. We are here to help you. That's what we're here to do. So if you have questions, call us or email us, and we will answer them for you. Okay? Someone saying, you know, I didn't want to call, that's not going to get you in the lottery, okay? So please, before you submit the application, what I recommend people do, read it, start gathering your information, set it aside. I guarantee you, you've forgotten something. Wait a couple days, review your application again, and you'll probably find out you missed something. Set it aside another day. And then the third time, review it, and then submit it. If you're comfortable and you think you've got everything, then submit it at that point. There are so many, you know, I've dealt with hundreds of people in my career, and there is no way we can cover everybody's financial situation. because there's hundreds of different financial situations. So if you have a question, please call us, and we will do our best to answer it. One thing we do not want you to do, unless you're way over income, is to disqualify yourself. Let us do that, because we may look at your income differently than you, all right? So I don't want you to disqualify yourself when, in fact, we may determine you're eligible. So please send in your stuff.